This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Brian Fernandez and Tan Chung An with the top business stories. The first, of course, is the Securities Commission. Yesterday, it issued a statement reminding the public of the investment risks of cryptocurrency schemes and digital token-based fundraising. The SEC said investors should fully understand and weigh the risks of such investments.
Okay, so there's going to be a lot of acronyms here, so we'll spell it out. Like an initial public offering, an initial coin offering or ICO means startups can raise capitals by allowing users to buy into their platform. In return for the money, investors are issued with new cryptocurrencies created by the firm. Although the functions may vary according to the digital token, users can often use them to purchase goods and services in the startup's platform or to take profit on as the asset appreciates in value, as has been the case. Yes, if it does. And the other names, so you have other names for it as well, initial token offering, token pre-sale, token crowd sale. So these are some of the things that they've used to literally raise money.
All right. So question here is why this warning, right? And the Securities Commission here in Malaysia outlines several reasons. You know, one being that some of these operators or these parties that are issuing these ICOs, they don't have a presence here in Malaysia, you know, making it difficult to verify the authenticity of these ICOs. You know, remember a couple of days ago we spoke about KYC, right? Knowing your clients. Now it's about knowing your issuers, I guess. KYI? I just made that up. I don't know. You know, but still, again, you know, given the kind of fraud that we are seeing in the online space, you know, really, is this risk bearable for the investor? That is a question that they have to ask themselves. Essentially, caveat emptor, buyers beware.
No, absolutely, Han, because essentially all you're doing, if you go and raise money via an IPO, you've got to go through a set of procedures. You've got to issue a prospectus that is validated, approved by underwriters, approved by the regulatory body. In this case, you essentially publish a business plan, which is called a white paper, and you can raise money. So, you know, investor protection, very, very limited. It's basically blind faith on the issuer.
And is it also a question of being able to shift funds internationally? And I think this is probably what the Chinese authorities are very concerned about. And this goes back to what happened earlier this week and the move by the People's Bank of China.
Yeah, you know, so the Chinese central bank straight up just declared ICOs illegal, plain and simple. In fact, just last month, you've got a word of caution from the Singaporean central bank. Also, noting that investors should be cautious when it comes to these ICOs. Now, you juxtapose that with comments from within the industry, though, because you've got the likes of Octo3. It's one of these guys who are set for an ICO. They actually welcome this kind of regulatory enforcement, so to speak, at least this heightened regulatory awareness.
I suppose because, Han, that would be simply to give the legitimate players an opportunity then to work within a proper framework.
I thought the whole kind of like ideological point of cryptocurrencies was in fact to escape central bank control and the authorities of governments.
Right, no, and hence you got so much interest in ICOs, right? You've got about $2 billion raised already via ICOs, and that's according to CoinSchedule. But here's the thing though, again, the risks are real because just earlier this week, you got CoinDash, I guess you got to remember these names now. It's a blockchain startup, CoinDash. They lost $7 million from investors, or basically hackers, right? So they stole $7 million from that ICO. So that money is gone, right? So investors, and this brings us back to the SEC's warning here, right? You got to weigh the benefits from that white paper versus the very real risks that we're seeing in the cryptocurrency world. You just got to ask CoinDash.
And we're closer to home as well. We have some Malaysia-based ICOs that were conducted in 2017. We have the controversial EcoBit. The Kelantan government had some involvement in this ICO. EcoBit was also listed on Bank Negara's Financial Consumer Alert. We had Hello Gold, which was on our personal finance show. A Sharia-compliant gold-backed venture that was did an initial token offering to raise money in order to perform an ICO later. We also had Pithys Coin aims to be the medium of exchange to complement the ringgit.
So speaking of the ringgit, of course, there's a recent rally for a currency that I think is now being called one of the best performing currencies in the region, but it's coming from a low base and in the debacle and reversals it's had last year.
Right, so it's gained over 6% against the US dollar so far this year, yesterday closing at 4.21 against the greenback. We'll see how it fares in a few minutes from now. Now, that 4.21, though, that's a level that we haven't seen since November last year. And of course, that 4.21 comes on the back of Bank Negara's decision yesterday to keep Malaysia's benchmark interest rate, the OPR, at 3%. So we've certainly come a long ways now. And looking at some projections, looking forward, you've got BNP Paribas expecting 4.1 to the US dollar in the fourth quarter. Standard Chart, a flat 4. But on the other end of the spectrum, though, you've got the likes of LGT Bank Singapore, who says we could still see 4.5 against the US dollar by year end.
I mean, one of the chatter, of course, around the ringgit is why it weakened. There's a lot of chatter about it being linked to our politics and, you know, uncertainties and scandals and such. But, you know, there are others who say, well, it's really about the price of crude and, you know, the fact that the price of crude's fallen and that the ringgit's has over time tracked that rather than anything else.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and also you've got recent comments from Stephen Innes, who is a regular commentator on our Market Watch segment. He's saying, look, those 1 MDB risks, those are in the rear view mirror. Those comments carried in the Malaysian Reserve today. You're right, you know, commodity prices, ringgit very often linked to oil prices. You've also got the fundamental story here in Malaysia. The Malaysia's economic fundamentals have been performing better than expected, be it our exports, be it our GDP growth, etc. But also, perhaps on the periphery of this discussion, there are concerns about liquidity, right, in the forex space. You've got these new measures when it comes to forex imposed by Bank Negara recently, and so that may have sucked out some of the liquidity. For example, banning the trade of NDFs down there in Singapore and other offshore markets. So yeah, liquidity is something else that could be weighing on the ringgit as well.
Yeah, so I wonder what impact this is going to have on all our strong export numbers. We've had, I think, the latest export numbers again that are over 31%, up almost 31% compared to July of 2016. So that's one of the questions I'm going to be asking Julia Goh later after the 9 a.m. news. And we've also seen double-digit growth throughout the year. But again, what we've said before, again, it's from a very low base.
You know, the idea, of course, the strong ringgit really is what segment of the economy and what segment of society this will either be welcome or not welcome. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that on one hand, a stronger ringgit may not be positive for our exports, again, which has seen double-digit on-year growth for much of this year. But it's on the other hand, you got to think it's good for consumers, right, with imports. And given that domestic demand, that has been a main driver of growth for the Malaysian economy, you know, and that appears to have been resilient. You know, so hopefully a stronger ringgit will boost consumer sentiment as well. And certainly that's what Aeon is banking on. They are seeing an improvement in consumer sentiments, so much so that over the next couple of years, they plan to build more malls. Like, we need more malls. They plan to build more malls, not just here in the peninsula, but also in Kuching. You recall back in March, McDonald's also committed 1.4 billion ringgit to double its stores here in Malaysia.
Okay, speaking about exports and domestic spending, these will be key issues under Budget 2018, which will be announced in exactly 7 weeks from today.
Yeah, so in the lead up to the October 27th announcement, the government has been engaging stakeholders, you know, for input on next year's fiscal spending plan. Yesterday, the Prime Minister had a Sembang Santai session. I'm told it's translated into chit-chat.
Yeah,
Sembang Santai with some influencers, you know, influencers being the you know, people from the startup world, for example, with from Groupon's fave, also from Local Usher, you know, some others involved in like fashion, academia, property, etc. So also this week, the government launched that website to get input from people ahead of Budget 2018. So, you know, hey, you know, given that next year is said to be that election year, unless if it happens before year end, you know, hopefully we can expect some election goodies.
Right? Yeah, I wonder about these, you know, mechanisms for feedback and to what extent anybody gone back and reviewed the suggestions that came in and how many were actually taken up.
Good point. Actually, in Budget 2017, they did exactly that. I have to get the details. But in the meantime, you've had, Brian, yeah, I think like government officials already teasing us, right?
Yeah, the government officials like Treasury Secretary General Tan Sri Irwan Seriga said that basically export growth is a priority under budget 2018. Cost of living, which is a hot button for politically as well, is a big agenda item, so that the current cost of goods can at least be maintained so that people don't feel the pinch of higher priced goods. The government also hopes to maintain current levels of subsidies in the education and healthcare sectors as well. Second Finance Minister Dato Sri Joe Ghani also hinted that the Malaysian government may increase funds allocation to SMEs. So SMEs have been looked at the next engine of growth really for the Malaysian economy. In addition, tax incentive that focus on development of the technology sector and the fourth industrial revolution, so Industry 4.0.
Yeah, and I guess with all budgets, we always look at the question, the continuing theme of fiscal discipline, as well as, you know, the bugbear of many, which is that the supplementary budget that comes often in the middle of the fiscal year.
Yeah, that's right. And to balance this out, you know, we've got recent commentary from Ong Kian Ming, who's the Serdang MP, and he points to the rapid rise in the budget allocation for the PMO, that's the Prime Minister's Office, right? It's grown by over 66% from 2010 to 2016. And that's pretty much growing twice as fast compared to the total budget allocation.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.